it's a lot harder to have negative stereotypes when you've seen in the living flesh the embodiment of somebody who disproves those stereotypes. And that's what we need to get out there and do as well.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, sci-fi and humanism, what's the connection? We learn quite definitively that openly secular is a campaign. And Todd does a cross between Patrick Stewart and Jay Peterman, which sounds remarkably like Todd. All coming up on this episode of the Humanist Hour. Hello, everybody. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Kim Ellington.
And welcome to another edition of the Humanist Hour. How are you, Kim?
I am excellent. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's great to have you on again. You've been very busy this summer.
I have been busy this summer, although I imagine you have too. Yeah, Dragon Con was the last major thing that I actually left my own state to go to. And I'm physically back. I think I'm starting to get mentally back from that. My brain keeps going back to the incredible people that I met and the absolutely incredible costumes that I saw, and kind of thinking ahead to what I want to do with it next year, because I must go. I must go back. I must meet Patrick Stewart at some point in my life.
You think he's going to come again?
Oh gosh, I hope so. I'll ask him. All right. I'll send him a personal, please. Hey, Patrick, you know, buddy, come on.
So about Dragon Con, I know nothing about that besides it's some kind of like comic type of thing and sci-fi and everybody who's interested in that. How is the secular movement and humanism involved in that?
So Dragon Con, besides being about comic books, which is a very big deal, and superheroes and sci-fi, also has a very well-developed skeptic track, as well as a space track and a technology track. So there was actually the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe was there. We had Margaret Downey did some pieces. She actually created the parade, which I did not know until this time. There had not been a Dragon Con parade, and she decided we needed one and put it out there. And she and a whole bunch of other skeptics and other people from that track dressed as different skeptics from across and freethinkers from through history, which was really, really, really neat. And wow. It helps introduce people to other things. But so it's kind of fun because it's not just sitting down and going to lectures all day. It's actually a lot of entertainment around it. But the lectures that there were really, really interesting. Of course, I didn't get to go to a lot of them. I had to hear about them secondhand. But next year, haha.
Were there any Christian groups there trying to, I guess, introduce the skeptics to their way of life?
There sure were. There was several, actually. Folks were coming up to me. I was at the American Humanist Association table, and there was Fans for Christ was a big deal. There was actually a lot of T-shirts and stuff about, you know, Jesus is a gamer. Like, and I'm not kidding. It sounds kind of funny, but
well,
people actually
that's a great
had
thing.
These.
That's a great thing about Jesus. He could be anything you want him to be.
Yeah. Yep. So they actually badges people had and lanyards for their badges that, you know, what would Jesus do? He would come to Dragon Con, apparently. So, and you know, that's fine.
Would he be in the skeptic track though?
I don't think he came to the skeptic track. I don't know because I'm not an expert, but I think he probably skipped the paranormal track as well.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So that was there too. But, yeah, it was really neat, and it was cool to meet a whole bunch of people that I know are doing work in the movement and get to meet them in real life and listen to what they have to say in such a celebratory, life-affirming atmosphere around a bunch of people that they know what they like and they're passionate about it, and that's the most fun for me is we're passionate about our skepticism and our free thought, but we're also passionate about Star Wars and Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica and everything else that I was hoping to see and did.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I always wondered if there's some kind of correlation between secularity and science fiction. And I don't know, because you would think that people who are very analytical thinkers, very rational, you would think that they might not be into the sci-fi. They might not buy into it as much.
But for me, I consider myself an extremely rational thinker, an analytical thinker. But I let myself go when I'm involved in these movies. I just kind of let it go and enjoy it. I wonder if there's something to that. I don't know.
I think so, definitely. And I think a lot of really good science fiction, and even some of the bad science fiction, they actually use, like if you get Wired Magazine or Scientific American, some of those, they use a lot of the ideas that people are having about where technology is going and incorporate that into the shows and to the movies, which I think is fantastic. And in fact, at the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, they have something called the XPRIZE. And the current XPRIZE is actually going to go to, they want people to try to invent the tricorder from Star Trek, like an actual one, like a single handheld machine that you can scan what's going on in your body, you know, how's your blood pressure, your temperature, if your bones are broken. So, you know, I think they're tied pretty closely together. They don't have to be, but they certainly could be if you're like you and me. Yeah. And I love both of it. I think it's neat.
Well, you know who they should get to enter that contest? The same guy who made the time traveling machine from Napoleon Dynamite.
Maybe they're working on that.
Maybe.
That'd be awesome.
I could just picture a whole bunch of these like geeky kids bringing these little devices.
Yeah, except just those like geeky that. Kids are all grown up and 40 years old now, like me.
Geeky guys, yeah. Guys and girls.
Yep.
All right, so what have you been doing? You were telling me something interesting about the unofficial Sunday Assembly. What's that all about that you've been doing?
Yeah, our local group, our Triangle Free Thought Society, which is an affiliate of the American Humanist Association, one of the things that we decided to do was we spend a lot of time working for the separation of church and state in North Carolina. And if, as our listeners know, they've heard me talk about it quite a bit. But one of the things we decided to do was to create community, to put together a program. It's running every other Sunday from September to December, where we actually have a chance to come together, and it's not about religion or not religion. It's not about anything except for celebrating life. So we're calling it a rational and inspirational secular experience. Which is a very dry way to say we have karaoke, we have inspirational talks, we have improv, and it's just craziness. We've got programs for the kids, so they have a chance to talk about whatever theme we have for the week. We got an amazing person. His name is Marshall Brain. Mm-hmm. He's actually local to our area, and he is the founder of How Stuff Works on the Discovery Channel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were very lucky. We ran into him and a couple years ago and started throwing the ideas around. And he has a website called decidingtobebetter.org. And we kind of took his ideas and our ideas. And he is going to be, or has been, and will continue to be our keynote speaker, delivering a TED-style talk every week. And then we get to sit around and discuss what he's talked about and what we think about it. And all of this in a park. Mm-hmm. Inside for the discussion park, and then we go outside and have food and eat and hang out afterwards. And we almost filled our room to capacity the very first week, which was 2 weeks ago, and we've got another one coming up. So
how big's the room?
Oh, it holds 120.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That is great. That
is
great.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, I talked about that before. I don't, that's really not my thing. I'm very not anti-music. I shouldn't say that. I'm non-musical. I'm not musical at all. And I don't get into the public singing. I enjoy music. I mean, I'm human. And I enjoy watching stuff. I'm just very uncomfortable with people singing around me. I don't know what it is.
Well, you could be okay with this because you are actually not alone, as you probably know. There's a lot of folks. And honestly, except for the karaoke part, myself included, I think singing in a group, it felt a little odd and weird. Uh-huh. So we decided for our group, what we do is we have a half an hour before the program starts. So if you want to show up for the karaoke part, you can. And if it's not what you're into, you just show up at 11 o'clock instead of 10:30. Mm-hmm. And then you can skip all the stuff that makes you uncomfortable. We're a little crazy. You know, who knows, we're out there, but we actually brought in a whole lot of new families, and we've got folks with their kids, and we've got some great kid programs, and that worked out really well too. I talked to, you know, I'm on the board of directors for Camp Quest South Carolina. So I talked to the camp director, and we're using a lot of the Camp Quest activities for the kids because we're it works. It just, Camp Quest stuff is very, it's critical thinking. It's sitting around and sharing ideas. And then, you know, we send them out and we have them do crafts and whatever else they might be into. This week, I think we're going to do we're going to have jigsaw puzzle races as part of it. So it's stuff that's fun. We did last week, we did paper airplanes, and we put together, you know, what do we think is the meaning of life? And when you sit down and listen to children and what they find to be the meaning of life, it may be because I have a child and, you know, I experience what that is every day, but it is fascinating to listen to other people's kids and what their experience is and what they find to be meaningful in their lives.
That's interesting. Pretty cool. All right. Well, let's introduce our guest. Who are we going to be speaking with today?
Bo, we are going to talk with our very own Todd Stiefel, co-host of the Cumanist Hour. Amazingly, though, he does do a few other things. He's a secular humanist, of course, as we know, and an atheist and a full-time freethought activist. He has a place called the Stiefel Freethought Foundation. Actually, I guess it's not a place, it's an entity. And it has given, I think, around $3.5 million to charities in the freethought movement, which is pretty amazing. He's the man behind the Reason Rally. A lot of that money, of course, the American Atheists and Dave Silverman ran it, but Dave Silverman himself has said that it would not have been what it was without Stiefel Freethought Foundation. And he has been working for years now to help forward the acceptance of atheists and agnostics and humanists into regular society. So we're going to have a chance to talk to Todd Stiefel of Stiefel Freethought Foundation, rather than having Todd from the American Humanist Association's The Humanist Hour.
Gotcha. Well, let's get him on the line.
All right.
Welcome, Todd Stiefel.
Hi.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
How y'all doing?
Hi, my name is Bo, and I'm openly secular.
That's excellent. I'm Todd, and I'm openly secular as well.
Kim, your turn.
I'm Kim Ellington, and I am openly secular.
Very nice.
Well, my little video is actually up on the website. It was pretty cool. I felt like a momentary. That was my 15 minutes, I think.
It was a full 15 minutes of you saying
no,
you're openly secular?
No, but that's all I get.
Oh, gotcha. Well, let's let the audience in on what we're talking about here, because now we just got like this three-way little secret going on here. We're talking about openlysecular.org, the new organization that has popped up. And thanks, of course, to Todd Stiefel. Todd, why don't you tell us about this organization? Give us the two-minute overview. What is this thing about?
Well, first, I can't take the thanks for it. It's been a huge team effort. It's actually not even an organization. It's a coalition.
Okay.
So this is a combination of over 20 groups in the secular movement, including American Humanist Association, and just about every national group in the U.S. you could name, as well as several international partners as well, who are working together towards something we can all agree on, which is the ending of the discrimination that is faced by atheists, agnostics, and other non-religious people. So that's what this campaign's about. It's about building awareness. It's about building bridges. It's about putting love above hate. And it's about talking to people about a message that religious people can get behind too, which is we don't have to agree with each other to accept each other.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. My name is Bo Bennett. I'm here with Kim Ellington, and we're speaking with Todd Stiefel, representing openlysecular.org. And what exactly is your role there?
I'm the chair of the campaign. So I've been kind of the... I've been involved in almost everything right from the beginning. So I kind of brought the idea to some people and kind of helped make it happen. But fortunately, I was the one who, I guess, got the ball rolling, building this off of the original Out campaign that the Dawkins Foundation ran. And now I'm really lucky because I just have an absolutely amazing team. And just it's wonderful. It's one of those things where I did a lot of travel over the summer, and we've got such great people. I could just leave and not worry about it. It's like, they're going to take care of it. I don't even need to be part of this now, which is... fantastic.
That's how you want it to be.
Absolutely. So yeah, the core team, if you will, of people is the Secular Student Alliance, the Richard Dawkins Foundation, my foundation, the Stiefel Freethought Foundation, and then the Secular Coalition for America. So the people at those groups are putting in the hard labor, putting in the time, and you know, helping make this thing happen, which has been a ton of work, but it's been great to be able to finally launch it.
So why the word, why openly secular? Is there something special or fitting about those two words as opposed to any other kind of campaign?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. We did market research. So that's a little strange for this movement. As far as I know, no one else has done like market research and focus groups before, but we did. And one of the things we tested were not only messages and concepts and things that would resonate, but we tested specific words. So we looked at how does atheist work? How does humanist work? How does secular, free thinker? We even tried an acronym. So like pulling a page out of the LGBT movement, we tried an acronym for all of our little identities, and that didn't test well at all. But secular tested the best of all of them and tested as something that people with differing identities could get behind. So people could say, I'm a humanist and I'm openly secular, or I'm an atheist and I'm openly secular, could kind of serve as a bit of an umbrella term that anyone could identify with.
Gotcha. You know why that word did so well, Todd? Because it sounds like sex.
Sexular, yes. I was at the Religion Newswriters Association conference over the weekend, and one of the writers had a t-shirt saying, religion writers know their sects.
Got it.
Yeah.
Very clever. Uh-huh.
They do know their sect.
CTS.
Uh-huh. Very exactly. Nice. But the other half of that equation is the word open, mm-hmm. where we specifically asked a lot of questions about different areas. And one of the things that came up was that people, both secular people as well as religious people, were not a fan of using the word out. That tested very poorly in general, even though it's historically been one of the words we've used the most in the movement. And the reason was people found it to be too close and too similar to the LGBT movement, and they found it somewhat offensive to compare the two too closely, where people might be able to understand that there's discrimination against the non-religious and that there's challenges we face. The consensus, which I agree with, is that it's much harder for people in the LGBT community and that we really shouldn't try to conflate the two issues. Mm-hmm. So a word that tested well alternatively was the word open. And so we went with that.
Okay. All right. And I understand that the logo actually means something. Can you explain, first of all, for our listeners, because obviously this is an audio podcast and not a visual one, so you're going to need to explain to them very graphically what this logo looks like, and then tell us what it means.
Do I have to do a voice? I think I should do a voice.
Do a Patrick Stewart voice if you can.
One man, one logo.
I don't think I could do a Patrick Stewart voice. Right. I'll have to work on that for the next show.
And for me, please.
Upon a striking background of brilliant white resides a logo triumphant in its origins. A orange-red heart open on the left side, twisting and curving in the helix of a DNA shape, representative of love, science, and reason. Emblazoned across the top are the words openly secular in a soothing, trusting blue.
You know what? That sounded a little bit like a J. Peterman ad.
Which ad?
The J. Peterman catalog from Seinfeld.
Oh, nice. Yes.
All right. So, Todd, who really cares if we stay in the closet or not? I mean, wouldn't we be offending people by coming out? And would it be better just to stay in and keep our mouths shut? Why not? Or why?
Well, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, people should be able to be open about what they believe and what they think without facing discrimination. And I think most people agree with that, except for the non-religious. So it generally is accepted if you're Jewish and you're open about your Judaism, or if you're Catholic or evangelical or Buddhist even. People may disagree with your belief system, but they're perfectly okay you being open about it. That doesn't always hold true for us. And that's one of the things we need to change. And that's specifically why we need to be more open. The research shows that when atheists are more common, discrimination goes down. So one of the ways we can help it appear that we're more common is by actually not hiding ourselves. So we're far more common than people realize. You know, atheists and agnostics make up roughly 10% of the population. 20% of the population overall is nuns, although that includes some theists and other religious people that just don't identify with a specific religion. But as a relatively large and common minority, many people don't realize that at all because we're hiding, and we're hiding because we're afraid of those consequences. We don't want to lose that relationship with our mother. We don't want to have repercussions at work or with friends. And yes, it does take some bravery. And yes, some people are in a position where they can do it. Some people just shouldn't. There may be too strong of consequences, particularly, let's say, if you're young and you're financially dependent on parents who might not understand or accept it. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of us and the majority of us, we need to be open about what we believe. We need to help humanize us. We need to help show people that we're good, decent people, just like everyone else is, and that we should be accepted by society and be a strong part of society, that there's no reason to hold things against us just because we're not religious.
Sure. Yeah, you said something that was very important. Here's where I always had a problem with these absolutes. Like, for example, if you say that everybody should be able to be open about their beliefs, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. If somebody believes that anybody besides the white male race should be killed or should be put in prisons or camps or whatever, then of course that's crazy talk and that's just ridiculous and they've got a problem and they probably should not be treated equally and with respect. But I think where you became clear on that is you're saying that people are very open about their religious beliefs, and that's okay, and we're accepting of that as a society. So we're just looking to be open about our non-religious belief, and we just want to be accepted at the same value as they are. So we're not talking about crazy beliefs. We're just talking about basically in the same category as the religious, but we are the non-religious.
Yeah. Yes, and I'd even go a little further than that, because I think that the people who have crazy beliefs about killing people should be able to be open about their beliefs too, because we need to know who they are.
Of course, yeah.
We need to put those folks away.
Right.
But we should be able to be accepting of other people based on having differing beliefs. It really comes down to, if you want to discriminate, you discriminate based on somebody's actions. So if people are running around hurting people or harming people, okay, now there is a reason to treat other people differently. We should be ostracizing those that are harming others or imprisoning them or helping them or various combinations thereof. But we're not out there doing it. Sure, we have some bad apples just like religious groups do. But in general, we're good, decent human beings. And when meeting someone for the first time, you should give everybody the benefit of the doubt. You shouldn't assume they're a bad person. And if you learn that they're Buddhist, you shouldn't assume they're bad. And if you learn they're Muslim, you shouldn't assume they're bad. So it's a lot of it, I think, just comes from ignorance and lack of understanding about what we really do believe in and what we do stand for. And a lot of that's because many of us have been hiding for a long time. Hmm.
What was it like to, you mentioned the four main partners in this campaign. What was it like bringing this kind of one idea to organizations that have somewhat different manners in promoting non-belief, shall we say?
It was a negotiation at times. The four main partners were relatively easy to bring on board. Most of them very much agreed with it. It was more just a matter of, how do we share it? How does it shape up? What do the logistics look like? Whereas some of the other partners across the 20 organizations required a little bit of discussion. And I think it was actually really positive because it helped us tweak our messaging and helped us really hone in what we want to say and what we represent. So, for example, we're called Openly Secular, but we have two religious organizations as partners. We have the Ethical Culturists under the American Ethical Union, as well as the Society for Secular Judaism. So these are registered religious organizations with the IRS. They both were a bit hesitant with the campaign about getting people to be openly secular. So we worked on that. We tweaked some of the messaging, we tweaked some of the wording, and it's, you know, it's the campaign's not just for non-religious people, it's also for non-theistic people, even if you have a kind of cultural religion, which these organizations and people do. So it definitely required some conversations, but we got there.
One of the things that I found was interesting when I was tabling for the American Humanist Association at Dragon Con was how many people came up to me and talked about their, a lot of times it was deism or their lack of belief, but that they felt like they didn't want to be considered an atheist, and they weren't sure if they were atheist or agnostic. And it wasn't so much that they shied away from what we were doing or what they felt like the American Humanist Association was, but just in general, they just didn't want to be confrontational. So I like that this is giving a chance to be, and there's so many of us who feel different ways, but to be able to say, it's just what I am, or the one less thing that I believe than you do, but we're all in this together.
Exactly. One thing that we've been really clear on throughout the campaign is that this is not a campaign about attacking religion, that this is a campaign about love and acceptance. And we're not asking people to respect our beliefs. We're not asking people to agree with our beliefs. We're asking people to accept us as human beings and give us each a chance as individuals, to give us that benefit of the doubt and get to know us and then judge us. You know, if once you get to know us, if we're eating babies, then you could say, all right, this person's not so good. But you're going to find we're not eating babies unless there's really good barbecue sauce nearby.
For the non-vegetarian folks, the baby cows, perhaps the baby peas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Baby arugula, too.
I delicious. Do love baby arugula.
I do. It's delicious.
So, Todd, you talked a little bit about the partners, and I read on the website you guys have movement partners and allied organizations. So what exactly are those, and what's the purpose of them, and could you explain the differences?
Sure. So the movement partners are national organizations from within the secular movement itself, and they've agreed to assist us in terms of giving ideas and promoting the campaign and helping us build awareness. And what we're doing for them is any of the materials we've created, such as all the toolkits, which we can get to later, they can be printed and customized to any of the movement partners. So if AHA wants the brochure on how to be open as a student, we can print them and put the AHA logo on the front and give them that thing, that brochure, and they can distribute it at AHA conferences, for example, as one of their own brochures.
Okay.
So that's one of the things we're doing with the movement partners. Now, the allied organizations, on the other hand, they are outside of the secular movement, and they're not making any commitment to necessarily promote us, but they are agreeing to endorse our mission of eliminating discrimination and increasing acceptance. And they're allowing us to put their logos on our website and say that they're an allied organization that endorses us. Those could be any group outside of the secular movement, from civil liberties groups, like we have the ACLU and Americans United on board, to religious groups, which we don't have any of yet, but we are actively working on. We are looking at trying to get religious groups to endorse this message, because this is not a tough message at the end of the day. Yes, some people will object, but increasing acceptance of other people is something that pretty much everybody should be able to get behind. So these allied organizations are ones that won't necessarily agree with us on all issues, but they do agree with us on ending discrimination.
Which is what I think is one of the best things about this, personally. And I guess we all have our opinions on how things should be done. And for anybody who has been involved in the free thought movement, if you are on the internet at all, there's people like groups like the American Atheists who are, they've been branded firebrand atheists, and they get in your face. And David Silverman, I've heard him speak, and his reasons why are very valid. It puts upticks on atheism in the Google searches, and it brings some of the things that they do actually bring attention, like following the Romney campaign around with a sign talking about what Mormons believe. Those things are, they're important. It's not how I would choose to go about it, but I'm also not on a national stage, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Except for the six people across the country who listen to us. Hi, well, guys.
When I was speaking with David Silverman on the Humanist Hour, we had that conversation. And I kind of made it clear my view on this. And that's, we need people coming at this from all different angles. I personally am not the type, the fire-breathing atheist. And I do not want to be associated with that type. But I see the value of them being out there. And I'm glad they are out there fighting the fight. And I think I made the analogy kind of like the soldiers out there fighting for the country. I could never kill anyone. That's that's not me. But I am darn glad that there are people out there who could do it. We need them all.
Absolutely. It takes different voices.
Yeah.
And different voices resonate with different people. You've got some people that are going to be more into the diplomatic voices. Some people are going to be more into the shout. I mean, the civil rights movement needed Malcolm X and they needed Martin Luther King. There's there's different people that fill different roles. And I think that's fine and fantastic.
Right. Right. Good. All right. So, Todd, is there going to be like some kind of annual coming out day? Or actually, we can't say coming. Annual being open day?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, there is. There's going to be an open month. So every November, we're going to sponsor an open month. And we're just starting to pull together the resources for that, although we have already developed a toolkit on how to be open at the holidays. And as well as that, we're going to have an openly secular day, the fourth Thursday of April every year. So that will be April 23rd, 2015 will be our first one.
Wow. Okay. And the whole month of November is going to be like an open month?
It is an open month. And part of the reason for that is Thanksgiving.
Right.
So that's a particularly
interesting. Interesting Thanksgiving conversations for the kids to come home. Mom, Dad?
Well, it happens.
People
say grace at the table. And uncomfortable moments happen. And we're not saying everybody should be open if they're not ready. But we are saying if you're ready and people can handle it, this is a time where you can discuss it. Maybe you live in a different city or you're going home. Well, it's better face-to-face if you can. Mm-hmm. So this is a time where you could talk about these things, and we've developed resources to make it easier. For example, we have Leave Behind brochures that you can print right from our website, openlysecular.org, that you can give to your parents. So after you tell them what you are, what you believe, however way you choose to identify, you can hand them the brochure, and it explains that this is what it means to be openly secular. These are some of the common myths we can show to people and help them see what this change means to make it easier, less painful, and less likely to have consequences.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. My name is Bo Bennett. I'm here with Kim Ellington, and we're speaking with Todd Stiefel, representing openlysecular.org. Unfortunately, this movement cannot have any colors because the LGBT movement hijacked them all.
They've got the whole rainbow of colors, don't they?
They do. That's unfair. That is unfair. And I think we should start a campaign to get some of those damn colors back.
That's why we took the friendly blue to start out with.
Yeah, we've stolen the blue, so their flags, and they've agreed to this, actually. I had a conversation with a gay friend, and he said it's okay to have the blue back. So all of the rainbow flags will be without blue from now on. And we created our own red-orange color, so they will not expand and conquer the territory between the red and orange on the flag.
All right. And we just need to make sure we get that in writing, too. Moving forward.
Oh, well, I'm sure he speaks for all gay people.
Like, you speak for all atheists.
A very fair assumption on your part, Todd.
That is interesting, though, because a lot of the issues that I usually take long internet breaks because I have work to do, unfortunately, but I popped up and started reading some of the stuff, and it is amazing the comments on some of these. If for those of you who have maybe not been aware of it, information about Openly Secular has been on the Washington Post, Huffington Post, the Daily Beast, the Religion News, the Blaze. It's actually, Todd, you've been doing a really good job of getting around, I got to say.
Well, you know, it's a team thing. The whole team gets around.
Yes. Well, they've been doing a really good job because the interviews, the articles have been out there, which is an amazing thing to get your voice heard. But it's amazing how many people, and not just in this subject, but I think in the internet in general, when we stand up and say, I'm openly secular, people who are not aware of us think that we're saying, therefore you're wrong and I'm right. And I wonder about your experience with that, because your voice is a lot louder than a lot of ours as far as the national news goes. And I know that if people think, if I say I'm an atheist out on the street and they're like, well, there's nothing, you know, well, they go on a defensive tangent about why they believe in God and I never meant that to happen. You must run into something even larger than that when you're out there.
Yeah, it's an interesting reaction, and it's relatively common. And I'm not sure why, because on one hand, I can see that we don't believe as they do. So if you dig into it, you could think, well, they must disagree with me. They must think I'm wrong. And I could see how somebody might see that as a threat to their belief system and, frankly, their identity as a Christian or a Muslim. But at the same time, they don't. That reaction tends not to happen with, let's say, Jewish people or Muslims or others when they meet them. So, for example, one religious person meets another religious person of a different faith. By implication, it's the same thing. The other faith disagrees on a whole variety of points and thinks you're completely wrong. And it is equally threatening as an atheistic perspective. So, you know, if a Christian meets a Jew, they don't freak out. Like, oh my gosh, this is a threat to my belief system. They don't think Jesus was the savior and rose from the dead. Like, well, they don't think that. They totally disagree with you. They think you are completely, utterly wrong. But that isn't as threatening for some reason. And maybe it just boils down to most religions ultimately do believe in a God or ultimately have some sort of form of authority. I'm not sure, but people don't freak out about Hindus, and they believe in a whole lot of gods instead of one god, and they don't.
Right. Well, here's my thought on this, Todd. I think that atheists are a threat to other religions because there is a lot of conversion going from religious to atheism. We don't see that same kind of conversion going from, let's say, Hinduism to Christianity or jumping around any other religions. We see all of this activity going from the religious to the non-religious. That's why we are a threat.
Yeah, I could see that for some of the groups. I think for many, we would be closer allies than other religious people. I mean, so for example, the moderate Christians have far more in common with us than they do with the, you know, ultra-conservative Christians, of yeah. which, you know, at this point, basically control one of our major political parties. So, I mean, if I was a moderate religious person, I'd be rooting for the nuns to grow just to help bring balance to the political system. But, yeah, I think that's a valid point. I think some people do see our growth as a threat. But at the end of the day, we've been around longer than any other group. Atheists are around before there were Jews, before there were Christians, before these religions even existed. You know, you go back far enough and all of our ancestors, you know, you go back far enough. There was a point where our ancestors were all atheists. They hadn't created God yet. There were no gods in existence. And we've been there for a long time. And yeah, I guess they've seen us as a threat consistently because there was a long time there where we were burned at the stake. So
yeah.
It's interesting to me that in my own life, I have a lot of friends who are Christian, or I actually don't know if I have any Muslim friends, but I have Hindu and Wiccan and pagan friends, and they all, and at a personal level, we all know, like, they don't feel threatened by me. I don't feel threatened by them. And it's just like this one little thing. This religion is just one little thing that is different. And it's no different than if I went, like, I have friends who hunt. I don't hunt. And we don't turn into this hunters versus non-hunters. And yet, when you look on the internet, you would think that it was this huge difference, and that the atheists and the not necessarily atheists, but folks who don't practice religion versus folks that do, you would think that everything was different. Everything. When in fact, most of what makes us human, we share.
And that's why it's so important to be open, because there's this perception that we're really different, and that's just based on lack of understanding. Everybody knows non-religious people, but not everybody knows that they know non-religious people. So we need to be out and open and and clear about our beliefs and help people understand that, you know, atheism and humanism is not just about not believing in God. It's certainly not about hating God or whatever the stereotypes are.
Right.
We have very clear values too. We believe in compassion and love and kindness and doing charity work and being nice to your kitten. And, you know, there's a lot of very basic things that we share with almost everybody else on the planet. And we need to help people see that and realize that. I mean, if you look at the statistics for the LGBT community, like whether or not you know somebody who's gay is like the number one correlating factor to if you support marriage equality. And if you don't, there's a really, if you don't know somebody, there's a very, very good chance you're opposed to marriage equality. And if you do, there's like a 68% chance you're in favor. So a lot of that is just, well, it's a lot harder to discriminate against somebody you know. It's a lot harder to have negative stereotypes when you've seen in the living flesh the embodiment of somebody who disproves those stereotypes. And that's what we need to get out there and do as well.
That's great. So, Todd, a really important question for you. Do you guys have shirts?
Soon we will. Soon we will. The shirts are in the works. There's other swag in the works. We already have like the little rubber bracelets that say openly secular on them, and we've got lapel pins and brochures and toolkits and pens. But yeah, the shirts are coming soon, including if we could pull it off, we are planning at conferences of having available shirts that say I'm blank and I'm openly secular, and then right there at the conference we can print on the shirt whatever you want to fill in. I'm a mother, I'm, you know, happy, I'm a musician, and I'm openly secular. Whatever it might be. Yeah, so that'll be pretty cool, which actually reminds me of an interview from this past weekend. And one of the reporters actually sent me the quote to approve, which I did, but it didn't make the story. And in there, we were talking about things, and I was just joking around. And I said, yeah, I want one that says, I'm Batman, and I'm a really secular.
Trademark violation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when the quote came in, that I debated that. I was like, wow, she's got Batman lowercase. I wonder if it should be uppercase. Like, well, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah,
do I have to like put a site DC Comics or?
Yeah. Yeah. So how could people get more involved in this? What is it again? It's a campaign.
It's a campaign. It's not an awareness campaign. Okay. It's a video campaign. It's just a way to get our presence out there and get our presence known. So the best thing you can do is really two things. I'd ask all the listeners to do two things. One, go to openlysecular.org and explore it, especially the resources page where it's got information on famous free thinkers that we got from Camp Quest. We also have all the toolkits and brochures I talked of. So these are things that actually help you become open. So if you're not open, they can help. If you are open, you probably have some friends who aren't, or you almost definitely have friends that are open to many people, but maybe not open to certain people in their life. Maybe they're not open with grandma, or maybe they're open with their parents. And we have these brochures already made, these toolkits made to help people to become open more effectively and know when they shouldn't become open. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing I'd say is record a video. Also on Openly Secular, there's some guidelines on how to record a video and what we'd like in those. But just record a video. Tell people about your experience. Share your experiences of if you've been discriminated against. Share your experiences of how you found community if you have. Share your experiences of how you've overcome challenges. Any of those things are fascinating, and people need to hear that. The people who are still hidden need to be able to have an idea of what it's going to be like, and they need support, and they need to see some of the things that are out there. And frankly, we also need the public to see what these experiences are like. So go record a video, post it on YouTube, and then send us the link to it, and we'll review it and link right to it. We actually set the whole video campaign up in a very similar way to It Gets Better, so that people can share their own videos and take part in the campaign.
All right. Kim, do you have any more questions for our esteemed guest?
I do not. I was thinking about you at the Moments in Science this week, and I was wondering, outside of Openly Secular, if you had any wonderful moments of things you learned about science this week.
Things I learned about science this week. I saw something on RichardDawkins.net. That was pretty cool. A group of scientists created a fiber that with electrical currents can change its appearance both in texture and color. So they modeled it after the cuttlefish, and it only can do a handful of colors so far, but they said it's just a matter of time and budget to be able to get it to do every color and texture you can just about imagine. So this is like something that could someday become our invisibility cloak. That's cool.
Nice.
Now, see, I thought your mirrored disco outfit was the closest thing we had to invisibility. I'm sure there must be a picture on the internet somewhere of Todd in his mirror ball suit, but if not...
I'll Google
yes,
it.
You should put that in the show notes.
That's awesome. All right, Todd. Well, thank you so much for being our guest and not just the host. It was interesting.
Thanks. It's kind of weird being on this side of the mic. I'm like tempted to ask you guys a bunch of questions.
Yeah, no, you can't do that.
Not
until we're question worthy. But for now, you are the question worthy person.
And well done.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's good to be on.
Yeah, you bet. So thanks a lot, Todd.
Thank you, Todd.
Bye bye. All right. Well, that was Todd Stiefel from the Stiefel Foundation and from OpenlySecular.org, which is not an organization, but it is a coalition, a movement. What's
a campaign?
A campaign. Okay. Anything but an organization.
It's a group of organizations working together, which I absolutely love. I think it's fantastic. And you can also find information about Todd at Stiefel Free Thought. foundation.org, and you can pretty much find information about him on any of the member websites that he mentioned, like the American Humanist Association, the Secular Coalition for America, the Secular Student Alliance. He is very active with all of those, so you can find a lot of information, or just Google the man.
That's it. That's all you got to do. And you can find him, of course, on thehumanist.com, the page for the Humanist Hour podcast.
Indeed.
As one of the hosts. All right. Well, this has been great. Kimberly, how can people get in touch with us if they want to?
Well, they should definitely email us at humanisthour@americanhumanist.org or call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. And you can also find us on Facebook.
All right. Well, Kim, it's been wonderful podcasting with you again. I missed
it. Yes, it's been great. I'm so glad to see you. You have to come to Dragon Con with me next year.
I don't know about that. But I'll definitely be at the Humanist Association meeting.
Okay,
in
fine.
Denver.
We'll do that one.
Yeah,
then.
That sounds cool. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. I'm Bo Bennett.
I'm Kim Ellington.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
I'm Chris Cluey. I played in the NFL for a little over 8 years as a punter for the Minnesota Vikings, and I am cheerfully agnostic and openly secular.
I'm David Silverman. I'm president of American Atheists. I'm an atheist, and I'm openly secular.
My name is Sanderson Jones. I'm from the Sunday Assembly. I live in London, in the UK. I am openly secular and openly sexy.
My name is Barney Frank. I'm a former member of Congress, Massachusetts. I am secular in my thought.
But I think the more of us that come out, the more that stigma, it goes away. I mean, we're your sisters and your mothers and your next door neighbors and, you know, the lifeguard at your local pool or your librarian or your teacher.
And this is why it's so important for people, for atheists, to come out of the closet.
My name is Carlton Kuhn. I used to be an ambassador in Nepal in the early 80s. I am openly secular.
My name is Vivek Palavali. I'm a brain surgeon by profession, but a documentary filmmaker by passion. And I'm openly secular.
It's so important for people to understand that there is an outside, that there is a community waiting for them. It is so refreshing for them to come into a situation where they can just be themselves, be open, be respected and loved for the human that they are, not for the fantasy that they aren't.
My name is Kelsey Jo Starr. I'm a rising senior at Virginia Tech studying political science and psychology. I'm currently the vice president at our Secular Student Alliance affiliate, the Freethinkers at Virginia Tech. I consider myself an atheist and a humanist, and I am openly secular.
My name is Jason Torpy. I'm from Marriott, Ohio. I'm the president of the Military Association of Atheists and Freethinkers. I'm a humanist, and I'm openly secular.
I
long ago stopped pretending that I believed in any theology. People in America in particular, given our history, grew up believing that believing in God was a good thing. That, and they've been hearing for years, Godless, to take an example, used as a pejorative. Let's just be clear that there are plenty of people who are very good people without a religious influence.
I'm Sarah Hayter. I'm a humanist and I'm openly secular. A lot of my religion previously, I was a Muslim, and it was kind of just given to me by my parents. I didn't question very much of it. Then when I started reading on my own, I realized that that wasn't the path for me. Then I made the choice to leave Islam, and now I'm a humanist.
Well, I was born into a Hindu family with a Hindu mother but an atheist father. But when I was 15 years old, the very first time I was exposed to the theory of evolution by Charles Darwin and the Big Bang theory of the origin of the universe and the structure of atom, I became an atheist because nothing else made sense once I was exposed to science and I started critically thinking about the world around me.
I think it's very important for seculars and non-believers to be vocal about who they are because everyone has to be able to live their own life. In a truly functional society, in a stable society, everyone is afforded the same freedom to be who they are, no matter what that is, as long as it doesn't infringe upon the rights of other people to be who they are.
I'm Anthony. I'm a university professor and author, and I'm openly secular.
My name is Jerry DeWitt. I am an ex-minister. I'm a secular humanist, and I'm openly secular.